This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Can women have both a high-power career and a family? Or as many put it, can women have it all? High-profile magazine articles and books like Sheryl Sandberg's Lean In have contributed to an ongoing national debate around this question. And now a North Carolina author joins the conversation with a work of fiction. Season of the Dragonflies is a novel about a family of women in the Blue Ridge Mountains. For decades, they've produced a secret fragrance that has launched the careers of famous and successful women. But now the unique flowers used in the perfume are dying, and it's unclear if either of the young sisters is ready to save the company. Author Sarah Creech joins us now from WFAE in Charlotte to talk about her debut novel. Hello, Sarah.
Hi, Frank. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here. Tell us about the premise of this novel.
So I intuited those messages that you opened the program with, targeted at women. One, you have a work-life balance that you have to contend with, but that women can't do it all at the same time. You can't be wife, mother, friend, career woman, and make it to all the extracurricular activities. And then there are messages like the one from Sheryl Sandberg that tell you you are in control, that you just have to make calculated decisions in order to do it all. And so I feel that women are very conflicted, the women in my life especially. I hear their stories, and I wanted to illustrate these ideas in this novel, one with this company that's handed down from generation to generation, the women answer to no shareholders. They are in charge. They make all of their decisions. And then with this flower that they grow, it's completely out of their control, the health of it, much like a biological clock, I suppose. So I wanted to look at what conflicts arise when you put these two ideas together.
Well, describe the elixir that's created from this flower.
So this elixir is based on a gardenia that I created. It's one of my favorite flowers. And so at the beginning of the novel, at the turn of the 20th century, I send the matriarch of the family, Serena Lenore, to Borneo. She's escaping a bit of an arranged marriage. And while she's there, right before she leaves, she discovers this flower and its power and goes on to found Lenore Incorporated and to make it into a perfume. And so at the base of this flower is the gardenia, and the magic is that any woman who wears this perfume can have extreme success in any career she desires. So it takes away the career climb for women.
I think the book sets up beautifully one of the central tensions in this polarity, this binary between, you know, sort of the career woman and the woman at home, and that is that the you can have it all part, the strategic decisions you make have to be made in this milieu of sort of an industrial economy, right? And that has its own rules. And then there's the natural economy out there, mm-hmm. I think represented beautifully by the flower itself, which is then turned into an elixir that can make you successful. So after processing. And these are the two universes in which the women of your novel have to navigate and go back and forth trying to be successful.
Absolutely. That's well stated, Frank. Thank you.
I'll blurb your next book.
Great. I'm going to take you up on that.
All right. So and tell it, because the character is actually, for you, inspired by a famous female scientist. Tell us about the inspiration.
So a few years ago, a dear friend of mine traveled to Borneo to go study orangutans at Camp Leakey. This is a camp that Baruti Galdikas set up as a refuge and to rehabilitate orangutans. And I was a new mother, had a job, husband. I really wanted to travel with my friend, but I couldn't go with her, obviously. So instead, I collected everything I could about Baruti Galdikas and read all of her memoirs, autobiography, and biography, and became just really enamored by her ability to go to that wild place alone, but never feel lonely while she was there. And I've always been drawn to women with very adventurous spirits. And that's why I think that I started the novel with Serena going to that place and finding this flower of, as a kind of self-affirmation.
It starts with Serena, but focuses on later generations of the Lenore family, a mother, Willow, and her two daughters. Tell us about them.
So I wanted to look at what would women do with this power that they had inherited. What kind of decisions would they make? And Willow is 61, and she has devoted her entire life to the company, sacrificed relationships, love, you know, romantic relationships, and relationships with her daughter. But she's starting to lose her memory. So she's experiencing aphasia, but she hasn't told anyone. Maya has stayed at home as anticipating taking over the company, and she's noticed that her mother isn't, you know, able to run the business like she used to. And then Lucia, the youngest daughter, left home as soon as she could, went to New York City to try and make it as an actress. She thought that was her talent because she did not have the Lenore family gifts of visions and prophecy. But her acting career does not pan out. And so she comes home at the beginning of the novel only to find the business in crisis.
Will you read for us?
I will. So the first excerpt that I'm going to read is from Lucia's point of view. It's early in the novel. She's in her New York City apartment and she's finalizing the details of her divorce. She is in a moment with her soon-to-be ex-husband, Jonah, and they're thinking of rekindling their intimacy, but then the dragonflies interrupt and they come for her for the first time in many, many years. Jonah stared into her eyes. She let him kiss her, but she couldn't manage to relax her lips and she kept her eyes wide open. Too much had happened between them now to recover this element of their relationship. A dart of indigo flashed by the window pane. Lucia glanced in that direction and pulled away from Jonah. She saw nothing save concrete beyond the glass, but the moment to make this big mistake had already passed, and she ducked underneath his arms and stood up. "Not my best idea," she said. Jonah traced the corners of his mouth with his thumb and pointer finger, the way he always did when he didn't agree with her. Another bright streak of blue dashed outside the window. "Isn't that the strangest thing?" she said. Lucia moved toward the exposed brick wall in their apartment. "Are you seeing this?" She pointed to the window in the center, but by this time she didn't need to. So many blue dragonflies hovered right outside that she couldn't count them all, their collected mass blocking out the sunlight and darkening the room like a curtain. The insects tapped their jaws against the glass. Jonah said, "It's like they want in." Lucia closed her eyes and clasped her arms together. She couldn't suppress the smells of wild honeysuckle vining on fence rows and split trunks of cedar and tulip poplars and oaks ushering forth from her memory.
Sarah Creech reading from her debut novel, Season of the Dragonflies. And dragonflies do play an important part in this novel. Tell us about them.
So I've always seen dragonflies as a symbol of transition and change, and I had no idea they were going to be a part of my novel until this very moment when I wrote this scene. It's, you know, just one of those kind of aha moments of clarity when you think, oh, yes, they were meant to be here. And they end up following Lucia and the entire family all the way through and play an important part of her childhood. But it's not something I anticipated when I started drafting the book.
You like their agility, their ability to kind of change direction almost magically?
I do. And Lucia needs that right now at the beginning of this novel. So I think that's why this insect.
I mentioned magic. It seems to me there are elements of magical realism in this book.
There are not too many, I don't think. Certainly, it's the magic of the everyday world. Most of the novel is set in the world that we know. But these women just happen to have very special powers.
Well, and I think that's the beauty of it. I mean, in a Middlemarch kind of way, you set up another world in which the power that you have, the skill and talent that you have, is uniquely suited to making you a genius and quite successful. And then if you place me in a world where the rules are a little bit different, my adjustments might make me look awkward and make me less successful.
Right. And I think I was also channeling the culture that we're in now of meritocracy, and that to be successful, one way is to have extreme talent. And so the perfume amplifies that.
Which is a magical element in itself, in the power that it holds. You grew up in a family of storytellers, I understand, and people who love to tell folk tales. Is that true?
I did. And I grew up in a house full of women. There were no men there. And so we loved to tell stories. My mother is a voracious reader. Probably the most important influence on me as a young child, took me to independent bookstores, the library. She always had paperbacks scattered on her bed and amongst her things. And so she loved to tell stories, fiction, just tales of the past, too, of our families. And I've always been interested in folklore, too.
And
studied it on my own.
Well, and again, that's a universe, the world of stories, in which you can have absolute authority and power over the world through imagination. So when Serena loses her memory, the mind, the ability to kind of craft the narrative, that this is a difficult moment for the family.
Well, when Willow does, absolutely. Willow. That's right. And she needs one of her daughters to step up and take over. And they're in their 30s, but neither woman is ready.
Your interest in scents also, not common sense, but fragrances plays an important part of this. Tell us about your love for Coco Chanel.
Oh, Coco Chanel. I stumbled upon her, in the library one day. It was a kind of the biography of Chanel No. 5 and how that scent was created. And I, again, like Brutti Galdicus, Jane Goodall, Diane Fossey, I feel like Coco Chanel is a very, very powerful woman. She changed the way that women are seen and viewed and the way that they acted. And her scent really revolutionized fashion in the perfumery world. So she was also an early influence for this book. That's why she's in the epigraph.
And in this book, you explore darker themes as well, greed and anger. Maya makes some bad choices. Ethical questions arise as well.
She does. I think one of the most important is it right to harm one for the sake of many? And that's one of the decisions sort of Maya deals with and out of impulse makes a really bad decision. But for the sake of the family, for protecting the privacy of the company, since it is a black market operation.
Will you read for us again?
I will. And in this excerpt, I want to introduce Maya, the older of the two sisters. And she has just finished an afternoon rendezvous with her younger lover. And so she's walking him outside of their cabin, a very private place, also surrounded by 1,000 acres plus of the, in the Blue Ridge Mountains. And so he's leaving, and she receives a sign from the dragonflies about her younger sister. Maya went back inside and turned to close the front door. Luke's cloud of dust dissipated, and in the green field that sloped down into a valley full of hay barrels, 1,000 or more cobalt blue dragonflies hovered like a standing army. With her blonde hair rolling down to the small of her back, Maya pushed the door open again and ran down the steps across the dirt driveway and into the middle of the field. Lucia's dragonflies were amassed in a greater number than Maya had ever seen, and they parted as she approached. Maya grew nervous, and she looked up into the heavy cumulus clouds that were like giant peaks of meringue. In the center of a large billowing cloud, and she saw her sister's face, so similar to Maya's, with the high cheekbones and tiny chin and wide-set eyes, but it was most certainly Lucia. Just as quickly as the image had arrived, the cloud broke in half with the summer sun piercing through to Maya. She closed her eyes to feel the heat on her entire body. Why had the dragonflies returned? Lucia didn't have a place here anymore. There was no way she'd come home. Not now. Not after so many years away. But the dragonflies surrounded Maya until she felt cocooned, and Maya swatted at them and screamed, "Back off!"
Sarah Creech, reading from Season of the Dragonflies on the State of Things. It is her debut novel, and it is one that, we said in the beginning of this conversation, was in some ways an exploration of this big question abroad today about whether women can have it all. Did you change your mind? Did you have an idea going in? Did it change at all as a result of reading this writing this novel?
I don't think it changed. I don't think I had a set opinion when I went in. I have my own experience, but I certainly wouldn't go just on that. I think it's very hard to balance a full-time career, young children, and a healthy marriage, let alone to have any private time with yourself, right? I think that women need a lot more support and community. I think that's what I discovered by the end of the novel, that the where they go wrong, where the Lenores go wrong, is that they're so insular and they don't have enough help from the outside because it's so private. And I think a lot of women feel that way, that their struggle to balance work and life is a sort of a private kind of struggle. And we need more community assistance to help women with that.
Well, and if I may, in that sort of industrial economy out there, there's not much support for that kind of way of working versus a much more collaborative approach that would be found.
It's not flexible, you're right.
Not quite as flexible. So in addition, now you're a creative writing teacher at Queens College in Charlotte, I understand,
yeah.
And you lead study abroad trips, which also had an influence on your work.
That's one of the best parts of my job. Queens University of Charlotte has a very high percentage rate of travel for their undergraduate students, and I was able to take a group to Paris, which was wonderful because I was able to teach a class to prepare them to go, and I had a lot of freedom with that. So I spent a lot of time on Parisian culture. We focused a lot on Coco Chanel, the fashion industry, the perfume industry. And so to go there and to be immersed in that culture was very exciting.
Sarah, what a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sarah Creech talking about her debut novel, Season of the Dragonfly. She's going to be reading from her book at Park Roads Books tomorrow in Charlotte and Malaprop's bookstore in Asheville on Friday. And you can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. State of Things is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Hadi Magdawi, and Will Michaels, our intern Charlie Shelton. Robin Copley is our technical director. Brent Wolf is the news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stasio.